Market insight and analysis. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
Good Thursday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Kane today with Jim Cramer at the New York Stock Exchange. David Faber's at the NASDAQ. In a few moments, he'll have an exclusive with the CEO of Philip Morris International, his company, and Altria, as you know, ending merger discussions amid the vaping crackdown. Futures are green. Some positive comments on U.S.-China trade coming in just a bit as we get our first look at the whistleblower complaint ahead of that House intelligence hearing. 10-year 169 final Q2 GDP is right at 2%. Our roadmap begins with the political risks for stocks. The president says markets would crash if impeachment moves forward. Plus, vaping fallout. Philip Morris, as we said, joins us exclusively after calling off Altria merger talks. And shares of Beyond Meat soaring this morning as McDonald's begins testing what they call the PLT, a plant, lettuce, and tomato burger. Stocks coming off their best day in a couple of weeks. The House impeachment inquiry does remain in focus, though. Futures are paring their gains as House Intelligence now releases the whistleblower complaint. Right now, Acting Director of National Intelligence Joseph McGuire is set to testify on the Hill before House Intelligence, and we'll keep you apprised of headlines from that. President, though, did retweet a comment this morning, Jim, suggesting that markets would crash if impeachment happened.
Well, I think that the history of when Clinton was impeached as one of the first day tech was down 4.5% NASDAQ. After that, it was just the greatest buying opportunity ever. So, no, I'm not going to buy in that the markets would crash. Yes, I would buy in the idea that he was convicted by the Senate, which is not going to happen because you need 2/3 of Senate. And I don't even think, I mean, they could, Torquemada wouldn't be, would stay president. I really feel like that where we are here is once again, non-event. Like whistleblower, you know what we're back to, Carl? We're back to one of those situations where there are people who hate Trump so much that they say, do you see what this whistleblower said? That there was a lockdown. And I'm like, yeah, a lockdown. But then I say, what's lockdown? I mean, no, this is not the smoking gun that I think a lot of people were expecting, except for the people who hate Trump so much that anything's a smoking gun.
Well, as we know, this is not a trial.
No.
Impeachment is a political process, not a judicial one.
Right.
So it's up to the House, who, according to Politico, has the votes now if they want.
Well, I think that Speaker Pelosi is a great head counter. But just a week ago, I know she didn't want this. Now, obviously, new evidence changes her mind. I think it's great that people change their minds. But I do believe that once again, even though the Democrats assured me that this would not happen, that if you read the stories, you don't know what really happened other than legendary Ukraine funny man seems to be, he was a comedian. Seems to be very happy, and that maybe they picked the wrong guy to say that Trump bullied him because it seemed like that they're pretty convivial. So what happens is, once again, you just say, I don't know, this is too hard. I forget about it. How'd Nike do?
That is the key. How this inquiry process impacts trade, right? Passage of USMCA.
That's I worry about.
Any spending deal. November 21, you're facing a new shutdown of the government. Not to mention gun control and drug pricing.
Right. I mean, shutdown government historically down a couple percent before and then goes up. USMCA, I think, is a big deal because a lot of great companies really need that. And I know that Speaker Pelosi wanted that to happen last week, was just worried about safeguards. When I was speaking with the president's people yesterday, it is harder to imagine that someone who's busy trying to impeach you also wants to sit down and make a big deal with you. So that may be the one that is actually hurts a UPS, hurts a KSU. The companies I speak to really wanted this, you know, autos. Yep. Maybe GM gets a break in the strike.
Cantor's out today with a bearish note saying sell transports, essentially.
Yeah, well, the transports are the ones that are hurt by that. And there's no two ways about it. That's just true. You need Nancy Pelosi to come out and say, look, this is not at risk. We still want to do this because the American working person needs it. And I think that's a harder dialogue. It's a harder storyline because of what she said yesterday. So the day before, it's dispiriting from the point of view of stocks to have it. So once again, we want to pay less for stocks because of an internecine fight. But then there are people who say, listen, Jim, this is a constitutional crisis. We should sell all stocks. Every constitutional crisis other than 2007 has been buying opportunities. What we have to do is look at the fundamentals. Now, I know that sounds like a hack, but the fundamentals do matter. Last night's J-Bill, fantastic. Really a great read across the board for Internet of Things technology. Last night, KB Holmes, really amazing. Last night, whistleblower, legendary Ukraine funny man. Hard to to dovetail to. I mean, I pick up the New York Times, and obviously I look at the New York Times, and it says that Trump has just been found guilty. Oh, no, not yet. And I just find it's so hard to understand. I'm not saying Democrat or Republican. I'm saying it's really hard to understand.
All right, if we're going to have a conversation then about fundamentals, corporate profits are starting to get squeezed. A lot of caution on the street about rising wage costs. Nothing, you know, there's trade and incremental costs on trade, but as wages are up, and we'll get more core PCE now, 2.4 in line.
Well, I think that wages should be up because I think workers have been underpaid, and I think they're catching up, but there are great productivity gains. Last night in the KB Homes call, I just said, you know, of course, labor costs are going up a little. There's a shortage of workers. We don't allow immigrants to come in as we used to. If you wanted to be able to make it so that wages went down, you just have more immigrants come in. But I do think that's part of the price of – that's part of the collateral damage of going for maybe 2% on employment. I mean, look, this economy is still strong, except for the companies that directly related to China. And those who want to portray this economy as deeply related to China are missing the point. There's about – I have about a quarter of the S&P that I do have to factor in. But then you go over Nike. And you know, Nike, remember what Mark Parker said? This is a company by China, for China. It was like, you know, of China, by the people, before the people. And Nike was incredible. Starbucks, deeply in China. Kevin Johnson would tell you China's the strongest part. If we had Tim Cook here right now, he would say, look, China is really strong. So it is steel. It is, there are lots of certain, like lumber today. We read about the lumber companies that really made a big bet with China. That's wrong. But when I look at the retailers, when I look at Walmart, I look at Amazon, which I know is in the crosshairs of the government right now, but Target stock never came after the big run. Costco's doing so great. And Home Depot, another positive note today.
Yeah, we'll cover more of those names. There's some calls on Target and consumer up 4.6 on this Q2 GDP number. It's all about the consumer here.
Yes.
And the wheels of commerce continue to churn, David Faber, whether it's M&A or a big IPO where you are today.
That's right. We will talk about Peloton later, but right now we're going to talk a bit more about a deal that didn't happen. I'm talking about those merger talks, of course, between Philip Morris International and Altria. They were officially concluded as of at least yesterday. Joining us in a CNBC exclusive now is the CEO of Philip Morris International, Andre Konzopoulos. Nice to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
In New York City, where you've been for a couple of weeks. Let's start off with the deal talks. We learned about them on August 27th with a brief announcement. And they concluded without reaching an agreement, let's call it yesterday or the day prior.
Yep.
Why were you unable to reach an agreement with Altria for a deal?
Well, you know, as you know, we already have a relationship with Altria because of the IQOS license for distribution in the U.S. And what we looked at is if there is a better way to maximize value for shareholders, looking at the strategic rationale in terms of additional revenue synergies, cost synergies, obvious. In addition, more focused resources on both sides. But at the same time, clearly, like in any merger, you have to take into consideration the environment, shareholder sentiment, and I would say the effort required versus the priorities we have just now on the market. So we concluded that the best course of action is to end the discussions on the merger and focus instead on the forthcoming launch of IQOS and the partnership going forward.
You know, my understanding had been, though, that there was a likelihood of a deal until this vaping crisis, if we can call it that, sort of began to become something of great significance. Is that the case? Do you think you would have reached an agreement were it not for the sudden banning of vaping products in various parts of both the U.S. and around the world?
Yeah. Look, it is an evolving environment just now in the U.S. And I think what we see is, first of all, to look at the bigger context, okay, all tobacco-containing products, including nicotine products, are regulated by the FDA. Okay, we had an exception for a period of time for the vapor category. If I remember conversations, because they're small companies, small entrepreneurs, and it was kind of a heavy process. Now, I think the process is ongoing. It is a very emotional issue, as we know, because it involves use by teenagers and vaping. And this is should be the priority by everybody to address, because this is a serious issue. And I think over time, if we take a 2-3 year horizon, after we will be gone with the e-vapor category through the pre-market tobacco product application process, say end of 21, 22, I think what we will see is a highly regulated in terms of product, marketing, and other restrictions category. But I do believe that at the end, strong brands and companies that have size and are doing the right things will be the ones that will be the winners. Now,
right.
Forecasting exactly how is this is going to happen with high precision is a bit difficult today. Everybody
understands.
Is that
why, given the lack of the ability to forecast right now in this immediate moment,
I think there are many scenarios
to reach a deal with Altria?
No, that's not the case. I think we took everything into consideration. As I said, also investor sentiment. And I understand
our
investors.
Tell me about investor sentiment, actually.
Yeah, our investors were not very supportive, and we have to take this into consideration.
Do you think they failed to understand sort of the strategic rationale for the deal? You weren't able to talk about it while you were talking.
Exactly, so.
People were talking to me about the ability to bring together these two organizations, invest more in R&D, innovation, using what is a window that is open now as a real opportunity. Did your shareholder base fail to fully appreciate why you wanted to do it?
Shareholders, of course, had their own opinions. We couldn't explain, but it doesn't matter. I think this is closed. The discussions have ended. For the foreseeable future, we can only focus on getting IQOS, which is the only product that has authorization by the FDA on the market.
Right.
I think we have a corridor of opportunity here because there will be a lot of change in the vapor market. And I think that's where the companies are going to focus.
I think, aren't you in some ways not in line with your own shareholder base? Are they either not understanding some of the weakness you see in the overall business or the need to move more aggressively? Or are you failing to understand their concerns in some fashion?
Look, I think sometimes there is a little bit of confusion amongst shareholders in general about all this new category, which is understandable because the category is new. There is discussion about decline of cigarettes. And obviously, as the new categories emerge and consumers and smokers move from cigarettes to these alternatives that hopefully they will be proven to be better, we will have a decline in cigarettes. This is in the U.S., and this is what's happening internationally. If we take the example of Japan, for example, we have a 25% decline in the cigarette market because products that are heated tobacco products like IQOS and others, have convinced consumers to switch to these products.
Right.
I think this is very good for public health. So this is what is going to happen. And however, who is going to be the winner and the loser is what the shareholders are worried about. I think Altria and ourselves are very well positioned both in this market and internationally because we have the portfolio of products for, you know, the new world.
Mm-hmm.
We have the first, as I said, that is approved by the FDA. And I think we are very well positioned to be the winners in the longer term, where we hope one day cigarettes will stop existing and better products will be used by people that we will not otherwise switch. And that's how I see it. Now, I understand that anytime there is a transition in an industry, shareholders are worried and sometimes over-worried. But I think both companies are very well positioned for the future.
Okay.
I think also, we see very good first steps announced yesterday from Juul. That has been a little bit at the center of the discussion.
Yes,
but it's not the only e-vapor company, obviously. But it's a first very good step, and I think that was the right decision from the board of directors. And I think Altria also, with the experience they have from a very regulated category, have played a role, and they have a role to play going forward. As I said, we need to focus now on getting the products through the process of the FDA, because
right.
There is a lot of emotion and a lot of overreaction sometimes, and address the youth use of nicotine. And that requires quite a lot of action, not only strict regulation of flavors, but requires age limits, access control of the retail, technology to do that, technology in the devices, and education, because we told the children, don't smoke.
Right. You know, now we have to tell them don't use nicotine. I want to stop you there if I can, just because my colleagues at the New York Stock Exchange, Jim Cramer, has a question for you as well. Jim?
Yeah, Andre, I have to disagree with you that you think that both companies have a good future. Altria is clearly a wasting asset. It wouldn't be at 8%. The only thing that Altria had was a renegade company called Juul. You know why I call it renegade? Because you chose to go through the FDA in a very rigorous process for IQOS. Would you have advised Juul to be able to take the strategy they did? Or would you think that it would have been better had they gone through the FDA rather than try to fool a lot of people? Oh, I'm sorry. Rather than convince a lot of people over 21, oh, I'm sorry, they used a lot of underage people. They didn't expect that. What I'm saying to you, sir, is IQOS did it the right way. Did you really expect that Juul would do the back door? And do you think that was right?
Well, I think Juul and any other e-vapor product have to go through the FDA process. That's something we always advocated, not only in the U.S., but worldwide. We think a nicotine product must be regulated. And I think the FDA has the best process in the world, and I encourage governments everywhere else to adopt similar processes, because that creates certainty for the consumers, eliminates the confusion, and a level play field. Now, we are in the process, as we know in the U.S., as of May next year, everybody has to submit PMTA. These things take time and a lot of investment to do, but I think the companies can do it, they have to do it, and then I think the whole thing would be better addressed, because pre-market the products will be reviewed, and then post-market they will be very strictly followed by the FDA. And I think under this scenario, we will have a much better industry, and the best players and best brands will prevail. But I encourage everybody to go there as fast as possible.
Well, then shouldn't Juul just pull its product, just suspend it everywhere in this country, and maybe even the world, until we get the data that we need? Why shouldn't Juul just say, you know what, full stop, let's do this? Wouldn't that be the right thing? And you know, I got kids. I sure wish they'd do that.
Well, as I said, product is one thing, and I think we need strict regulation of flavors. If I'm not mistaken, Juul was the only company that has removed flavors from retail trade. Now, at the end of the day, I see also states regulating these products and taking them out of the market. We have to be careful here not to have an over-exaggerated reaction, because we need to focus on kids not putting their hands on these products, but also take into consideration there are millions of Americans today that use e-vapor products. And, you know, be careful that what is going to happen to these people if we have a blanket elimination or ban of the product. So I think we need some moderation here, and I'm longer-term thinking. But I think once the FDA process has finished, things will become calmer and much more clear.
Well, what does that mean for the U.S. market for the time being? And I mentioned that Imperial Brands this morning slashes its revenue growth expectations because of next-generation products in the U.S., namely vaping, for example, deteriorated considerably over the last month or so, given the concern. Is that your expectation? Is the market for new and replacement tobacco products going to be sort of in flux, if not doing particularly well for some time?
Well, I think if companies do things right, and I think we did the right thing, we developed these products, we put them through a very rigorous scientific assessment internally, preclinical and clinical, then we submitted to the regulatory authorities, including the FDA, so consumers get the assurance that at least they can trust the product, and what we communicate as a manufacturer is truthful and not misleading.
Right, and that's the IQOS product. We should make it clear. The heat-not-burn tobacco product that you're rolling out around the world, you're partnered with Altria here in the U.S.
Which is not any vapor product.
And it's not vapor.
But we should not be conflating vaping in general. I think when products will go through the FDA process and do the right assessment, we will also see that vapor products are better than cigarettes and more appropriate for public health.
You believe that they will be
better. But they have to go through the process.
But you believe they will be better for health than tobacco?
Yes, I do.
Why?
Because they have much more toxicity and exposure to chemicals vastly lower than cigarettes. And heated tobacco products have the same. But the thing is, they have to go through the process. So once this is done, I think the category will recover, but with the right restrictions, the right limitations, the right access control, so we don't have, you know, kids using nicotine products.
Right.
And then adults have options to switch, and I think this category is the future. And I think we are very well positioned to succeed in the category because we're the leader in this category.
And do you believe, I mean, you mentioned earlier your goal is to ultimately replace tobacco.
Absolutely.
Is that going to be hindered in part because of the concern now about vaping and perhaps even simply because people are concerned about these replacement products overall? Are they just going to stay with tobacco longer?
Look, I think some of the comments made are confusing people who smoke today because sometimes they don't know if these products are worse than cigarettes. 50% of Americans still believe that e-vapor products are worse than cigarettes. And I think that's wrong.
No, but we've got people dying from vaping. It's kind of scary.
Okay. First of all, it is deeply concerning that people die irrespective of the reason. Now, from what I understand, the FDA and the CDC are investigating the health reasons for that. But my understanding is this is not concerning traditional
right.
e-vaping products that contain nicotine.
Right.
Concerns other substances.
Yes.
So, again, we should be careful not to create confusion amongst the millions of people that use vapor products because this is not traditional e-vaping products with nicotine. And actually, these products existed in the market
right.
for so many years when we never had an issue. So I think we have to let the authorities conduct their investigation, but the recommendations they issue make sense. Don't buy products that are not legitimate manufacturers. Don't buy products from the black markets, because that's where we have an issue.
Before we end, let's get back to the deal itself. You're not talking with Altria any longer about this merger of equals as it was described. Do you believe at some point you could re-enter those talks when the conditions are clearer in terms of the products that you're talking about?
Well, the talks have ended. And for the foreseeable future, we'll focus on all other things we do together. And there are many ways to continue our collaboration. I think coming out of these discussions, we're better aligned on many things.
Because you do? Why are you better aligned on many things?
Because we, you know, spending time much more closely, you align on many other things.
Right.
So it's a win-win for both companies. And I think we have enough ability, even without the merger, to further both portfolios of companies and create shareholder value for both companies. I think that's still a very good collaboration.
All right. Well, we look forward to checking in with you along the way and appreciate your taking some time this morning. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Andre Collinsopoulos, the CEO of Philip Morris International. Carl, back over to you.
All right, David, thanks so much. When we come back, Peloton's going public today after pricing the IPO at the high end of the range. We'll bring you the first trade, obviously. Also ahead, capitalizing on 5G. David's got an exclusive with the CEOs of Verizon, Qualcomm, and IBM at the T2 Summit. Futures hanging in there. We'll get to a ton of news on Target, McDonald's, Beyond Meat, Facebook, GM, and a lot more when we come back.
I'm David Faber at the NASDAQ today. Of course, my colleagues are down at the New York Stock Exchange. We are awaiting the open of Peloton here at the NASDAQ. That's not why I was here, but it's always interesting to be at the same place where the IPO will open. For now, though, let's get to a mad dash. We've got a few minutes to go before we get started with trading here. And Jim, take it away.
Yeah, well, very exciting news if you own the stock of Beyond Meat. McDonald's is testing new plant-based burger in Canada. It's going to be for a limited time, 28 restaurants. I spoke to Ethan Brown, the CEO, this morning. Well, obviously, this is the dream come true. He's quite confident that people will like it. Of course, it's his. But he's talking about McDonald's being the Moby Dick. And he looks like he's gotten Moby Dick. I would not bet against Ethan Brown. I would not bet against this faux burger is what I used to call it. I would not bet against this better delivery system for grain to your body than going through a cow. And I think that this test is going to succeed. I welcome Mr. Eastbrook to come on. He has always been a little media shy, but this PLT, as they call it, plant lettuce tomato, is very exciting, David. It's got the stock flying, and I don't think it's done.
You don't?
Because it's, you know, there's a lot of people who like it. They're, you know, let me be careful here. In where they did the big secondary, which is not far from here, has been a lid. But the stock's still heavily shorted. There's still a lot of excitement for it. Is it a flash in the pan? No. Should the stock be as high as it is? No. But people are going to be juiced by the fact that they're in McDonald's, which is something that a lot of people have speculated. But we've been waiting and waiting. And, you know, maybe you have to go to southwestern Ontario, which is also apparently the cannabis capital of the world, to be able to get this. Maybe you have some cannabis, and then you go and you get a plant-based burger.
It's only 28 restaurants, and it's only 12 weeks. So how do we know this is really going to stick?
Because I have never seen Ethan Brown be as confident and as excited. Now, he is a proselytizer. He's an evangelist. But I think that what we saw from Impossible Burger so far is good. And I think that this is what a lot of people are waiting for, not just vegetarians. People who just believe in the ethos of no cal, no methane, less cholesterol. Is it the best burger yet? Ethan would tell you it's still a work in progress. I would bet with Beyond Meat, not against it, in this McDonald's truck.
Yeah. Other big piece of news out this morning is reports that Disney is going to add literally hundreds of plant-based recipes to its park menu at Disney World and Disneyland.
I think that people have to recognize that this is not a vegetarian issue. It's an ethos. It's a millennial thing. When I spoke to Ethan, I've had burgers with Ethan. I've had a lot of things with Ethan. But, you know, steak made from plant-based, tacos, which are terrific. I would like to add them to Bar San Miguel. And I think it's just a wider issue. I think people just like the taste, and they like the fact that it's not beef and it's not slaughtering cows. There are a lot of people who care more about these things than my generation, where we felt like, okay, listen, one of the things you have to do to get a cow is to, you know, shove a bolt in its head and kill it. A lot of people think that that's just bad. And I don't mind blame them for thinking that way, gently, because my daughter, who feels that way, loves Beyond Meat. Someone was criticizing me earlier today. She said, Jim, vape, you're upset because it's your father-in-law. No, I'm upset because there's 150,000 people who will die of lung cancer. There are a lot of people who feel this is a good way to be healthier. You may disagree, but there's a lot of people who feel that way.
We're going to watch it, obviously. Big move in the pre-market. Let's get the opening bell here in the S&P 500 at the CNBC Real-Time Exchange and the big board of Salesforce celebrating 20 years.
Wow.
At the NASDAQ Peloton, an interactive fitness platform celebrating its IPO today. And we're going to have a lot more on TTON, pricing at 29, high end of the range. Valuation over $8 billion is twice the last round.
Yeah, it's a shame that it's doing this. You know, the good ones don't go. The good ones don't work like this. The good ones aren't priced at the high in this environment the last couple of years. They are ho-hum, and then they catch on. The bad ones are priced at the high, open way too high, suck a lot of people in. First day's real good, then goes down. I urge people to not buy at the opening. You might be able to make a few bucks, but you'll never get out in time. Interestingly enough, who introduced me to Peloton? Mark Benioff, co-founder of Salesforce. We have Mark Hawkins, the president and CFO of Salesforce, ringing the opening bell. I'd like to put a stick mic in his face and be really obnoxious like I did with Darryl, so maybe I'll do it.
John Foley of Peloton was on Squawk earlier this morning. Said that net new subs are the, quote, true north. And he said, we are prioritizing growth over profitability.
Right. Now, that the numbers are great. And there was a moment in time where people who were prioritizing growth over profitability had the best stocks. That came and went. This is the opposite. Right now, we're in a terrible market for that. Maybe today is the first day where people want that. I had Twilio on last night. Twilio stock has been straight down. Okay, straight down. And their company actually is profitable, that prioritize growth. The market doesn't want that right now. And I appreciate that Peloton wants us to think that that's what they want, and maybe that's a good strategy. But people who are buying the stock have to recognize that's not what the stock market wants, or WeWork would have come public. WeWork.
David Foley also said that in pricing the deal, quote, we weren't greedy. Said they did leave something on the table.
Well, we'll see. I mean, you know, I'm sure you guys have taken a look at Smile Direct recently. That has been nothing short of disastrous since its initial public offering, one that was touted as being very strong at the open and, of course, has proved otherwise. You have to wonder what would WeWork really have met if it had actually tried to come to the public markets. Of course, it would have actually been public, which would have been a key thing for it. But nonetheless, it's a tough market right now. And guys, I'm sure you saw Endeavor lowering the price range, lowering as
yes.
well the number of shares, Jim, that it's going to or the amount that it's going to offer. The UFC, no doubt, is a popular growth property, but there are concerns about the rest of that business. I know you guys are both represented by them, but we still can talk about it a bit, right?
Well, Smile Direct is the disaster of this era. Endeavor, see, I don't mind. Remember, I don't mind a stock that where the range just kind of holds in there. I don't. Yeah, a stock where the range goes down is usually a sign that there's no institutional support whatsoever. Endeavor, they are my agent, so I'm reluctant to really talk about that. I'm just saying, but in general, you want a stock that comes at pretty much the range that we thought, that has good demand, that isn't really exciting, goes up high, and then it goes up over time. Ally Yeti, which a lot of people felt was going to be a bomb because the balance sheet wasn't that good. So I would just point out that it's absolutely true that Peloton's red hot, but what also aptly true is that red hot stocks on an IPO have not been great places.
Well, at one point yesterday, 75% of this year's IPOs were down for the week.
Well, that's the problem. I mean, you know, I just don't want people to lose money. And maybe you can make. Maybe this is the one where you can make money. But I have to tell you that it's that would be unusual.
All right. I got some calls out this morning. Cowen adds Target to the number one slot on its conviction list.
Target's fabulous. This is Brian Cornell triumph same day. By the way, you know, Macy's is going back and bringing same day. I got Jeff Gannett is talking about how important that is. Free with $75 purchase for them. Look, Brian, he's reinvented Target. And unless you've been to one of the small format Targets or a Target that's in inner city where there is no other store, you probably don't understand why it's going up. If you're next to a Great Land Target, the old fashioned, you say, what's the deal? The new Targets are exciting and they are local and they are all about the neighborhood. And I love that. That's terrific.
There's a look at Costco, of course, Home Depot.
What's that, watch? It spells watch.
Yeah, yes, that's your acronym.
Sorry.
That's all right.
Well, I just am waiting for an ETF to take it over and take all the credit and make a lot of money, and then people lose money in the ETF, and they blame me.
Well, speaking of acronyms, and FANG, these reports now that DOJ is following up on Facebook antitrust probe would make it the fourth yeah. agency, if you include FTC, state AGs, and House Judiciary.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the Department of Energy, Department of Labor, and Health and Human Services to go after Facebook. Will you cut it out already? I mean, honestly, the Defense Department's going to go after Facebook. Enough! I mean, how many people can go after Facebook? I mean, what is Facebook? Look, if you think it's bad, stop using it. Now, here's an amazing thing. You know, you can stop using Instagram. It's allowed. I mean, the government acts like we're all stuck, handcuffed to Facebook, and it's really a shame, and we're going to break the handcuffs. It's a voluntary thing, for heaven's sake. I don't, you know, what, did they destroy everybody else? They're smarter than everybody else.
Antitrust law is not a popularity contest. Right?
No, but there are two kinds of antitrust. There are antitrust, which says we got to keep prices low, of which Facebook does, and then there's the old-style antitrust against Standard Oil, which is they're too powerful and let's go after them. We are now in an era where we are using the old style antitrust. They're too powerful. And the too powerful standard I have always found to be fanciful. I care about the products that drive other people out of business. I think Facebook has never, they haven't driven Amazon, they haven't driven Google out of business. They're very smart. Snap, Twitter, they're all in business. And during this period when Facebook's in a sentence, look at Twitter. I mean, both Mark Benioff and Bob Iger should have bought Twitter. They both say in their books that they shouldn't have.
Well, I mean, Snap might argue differently, that we had ideas that were stolen and leveraged because of their size.
Well, what the hell was so proprietary about what Snap did? I mean, honest to God, what were they like?
You don't think Stories is a complete copy of Snap?
What did Nelson Peltz say when I was interviewing him last week at this time delivering Alpha? We'll steal anything and it's great. I mean, it's in the public domain. Look, they're smart, okay? I use Instagram. My daughter uses it to build a business. My wife uses it to look at what my daughter's up to. I mean, everybody uses it for different things. But the government has decided, how many agencies? Four. Name me an agency. Four. Okay. I want to know. I want to know right now. Why isn't the Secretary of Navy looking into this? I mean, honestly, but can we have one agency? Let's have one agency. Let's amalgamate
that
them.
That is one of the worries, that there's overlap.
Have one agency. Yeah. I mean, do that's all they have to do is investigate Facebook? Well, why don't we amalgamate them? Why don't we have a czar?
Speaking of all this, guys, Amazon, big product announcement yesterday using voice assist. Bezos actually spoke to some reporters about facial recognition, saying that needs some regulation.
Well, facial recognition has time has come. I don't know. How about regulating the new Facebook product that's a lot like Carrie when she was able to move things through telekinesis?
Yes.
I mean, look, these companies are doing remarkable things. I worry about anything that doesn't invade your privacy but actually controls you. I mean, I think the big issue with Facebook is right now is Facebook, because I've downloaded WhatsApp, are they listening to what I'm saying? I don't want that. That would be bad. And a lot of people feel like because I downloaded WhatsApp that they actually are following me everywhere. If that's the case, I don't like that.
Right.
That would be bad. So have an agency look into that. But not four agencies. I mean, there's so many things to look into. I mean, the two things the government's looking into is a memo to legendary Ukraine funny man president, and they're looking into Facebook. I think that people are mad at me that they're looking into something that might cause 150,000 deaths, which is tobacco. But I don't know. I just don't find that these are the enemies of the people. I think China, I like that as something to look into, but they're not in Congress.
Right. And we're not even in a 5G world yet, David, which you're going to talk more about this morning.
Looking forward to around 11 o'clock on Squawk Alley, Carl. I'm going to have a unique panel, and we're going to talk about 5G in a way that we really haven't before. And there they are, Hans Vestberg, of course, from Verizon, Steve Mollenkopf, and Ginni Rometty. And this is not going to be about specifics for each of their companies as much as we're really going to try to delve into the opportunity here, where we stand. You know, we talk so often about what it means for consumers in terms of handsets and speeds, but the Internet of Things and the applications for the factory floor or for autonomous driving, for so many other potential things, is probably far greater than what it means for the fact that you're going to be able to download a movie more quickly. And so I think we're going to focus in part on that, the opportunity and the threat for companies like IBM and where we stand. Rare to get three CEOs of these kinds of companies together. And so very much looking forward to what I hope will be an interesting discussion about 5G.
You know, last night on the Jabil conference call, it's a very important call. They're talking about 5G as absolutely being a savior for a lot of tech companies. I think 5G is also going to be a savior for Dow Chemical because of all the different ingredients. David, 5G could be the revolution that keeps a lot of companies, in not just American Tower, going as a reason why you should own their stocks. What do you think?
I think it's possible, but it does appear that we're still a ways away from sort of that industrial revolution that you're kind of talking about, I think, in terms of how things can be even further automated with artificial intelligence as well. By everything having a chip in it, the lack of latency so that you can connect to the edge of the network, and there is where all the computing power is going to be. Will Amazon actually move AWS sort of there as opposed to where it currently is in the server farms? Yeah, there's certainly going to be the potential for great efficiencies. Jimbo, I want to talk to Vestberg and Mollenkopf and Rometty about this reality and when it's going to be here, because that certainly remains unclear at this point.
Yeah, I mean, also, this is right in the sweet spot of Huawei in China and who's ahead of us. And
yep.
I think there are a lot of people, including the President of the United States, believe that maybe we have to have Sprint merged with T-Mobile in order to be able to stay in the race. I know that that's not necessarily John Ledger is not there, but I think it's the elephant in the room. We need that deal to close. And, David, is that deal going to close? And I keep reading things now about how they're Roblox.
You know, Jim, it's very hard to say. I mean, the states are litigating. They're going to potentially go to trial, and it's unclear. I think most people believe that the companies have a better than 50% chance of getting it done. But there is still a key question mark as to whether the states in some fashion are going to prevail as they continue with the case, despite the fact that the Department of Justice has reached a deal with the parties involved that they feel will retain and actually even enhance competition in the wireless market. It's a very strange situation, as you well know.
All right. We're going to watch that, guys. We lost our gains at the open. McDonald's is leading the Dow for the moment. Let's get to Bob Pisani. Bob?
Sort of a flat opening, but a very typical pattern when there is less interest, or less follow-through on the China trade talks. You get cyclicals underperforming, and you get defensive sectors outperforming. So you just take a look here. There's your cyclicals, metals and mining, energy, bank stocks trading to the downside, more defensive consumer-oriented names, staples, utilities, which have been sitting at historic highs, all outperforming. Let's talk a little bit about this hot IPO market. We talked about this yesterday and what was going on and the market issues overall here. So three of the four really haven't changed. Trade war issues, global industrial and manufacturing slowdown we've been seeing, and essentially flat earnings, high valuations. We'll talk a lot more about third quarter earnings, but it's the same as the second quarter. Down slightly, but are going to be turning positive likely in the next few weeks. But it's been essentially flattish. That's the main story all year. And the new X factor here, the impeachment inquiry, a lot of questions about what that means for the markets. We don't have a lot of answers. We don't have answers particularly about the U.S.-Canada-Mexico trade agreement and whether or not the House, whether Nancy Pelosi is going to push that through or not. That's a big question. We just don't have the answers to that. There's drug pricing legislation that's out there. We don't know if that's going to get through. So this is a sort of added X factor for the overall market. That's not clear what's going on. We've been talking a lot about the IPO market and how it's doing here. Of course, we're waiting for Peloton to come here. They priced at the high end of the range. That's certainly good news. We're talking about the trends in the IPO market overall. But the fact is, it's been an ugly month overall for IPOs. There's been a real revaluations of pricing. This occasionally happens when markets get jittery. Just take a look at the IPO ETF. Remember, up 30% on the year going into September, one of the big performers. And we are now sitting at the lowest levels since February, essentially, for that. This is a basket of the last 60 or so larger IPOs. So it's a good indication of pricing for recent IPOs. If you take a look at what's been the issues, what are the problems that are out there? We've seen a big valuation pushback, particularly on things like software IPOs that are based on potential for future profits and future earnings out there. When market gets a little jittery, they get pushback on their valuations. Profitability issues come to the fore again, and that's a major issue. And I also think, legitimately, the WeWork governance issues, the issues that have been out there around WeWork's pushing back on insider dealings, the multi-class structure, the family ties, that has now become more important. I think it had an effect on that whole valuation question on WeWork, and is still having an effect on IPOs in general. That whole ESG, environmental, social, and governance issues, still coming to the fore. Recent IPOs this week, Lyft, this is a new low for Lyft, down 10% for the week. We see some of these other names that are weak. Pinterest, which has been all over the place. They went public back in April, but they're down 10%. There's a new low for Slack, down 10%. And Smile Direct, that's not a typo there, still dropping down 20%. So the bottom line is we're in this process now of reevaluating the IPOs and how much you want to push back on the valuations. And that's obviously infecting the IPO market. We're waiting for Endeavor Group. They're going to be pricing tonight. This is a partly the old William Morris. I have not seen any changes in their SEC filing, still at 30 to 32. There has been some discussion. There may be price talks. Still haven't seen it, though, in the SEC filings. And that's what matters right now. We'll keep an eye on that and let you know anything happens. Guys, back to you.
All right, Bob, thanks. Let's get to the bond pits as well. Got some data out this morning. Rick Santelli is at the CME Group in Chicago. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, Carl. Yes, and the data was actually rather fascinating. No surprises on GDP. Some of the numbers moved a bit, but for all practical purposes, as expected, some inventory builds. But if you look at a chart of the market, what's fascinating on the intraday of 10s is the minute we walked in here and opened the futures markets at 8:20 Eastern, from that bell, it just started to drip away. And it didn't really pay much attention to the data, which was virtually as expected for all practical purposes. But if you look at a one-week chart, some things should jump out at you. Yes, today we gave back most of yesterday's rate gains. But we could still see that the market seems to have bitten a bit. It's grabbing. So these are very important levels between 165 and 173 in 10s. Maybe the biggest news, though, remember how many weeks ago or months ago the yield curve was the center of attention. Everybody was biting their nails over it. Let's look at it since August 1st, and we know what a crazy August we had. There's definitely stabilization here. Now, granted, it's not very positive, but then again, it was not very negative. Minus 5 on the bottom, and, you know, yesterday did a lot of work at plus 04, 05. We're sitting at 04 now. But yet the biggest news so far of the week is continues to be with regard to foreign exchange. If you look at the euro versus the dollar, yesterday's close is a fresh 28-month low against the greenback, as you see on this chart. And the dollar index also yesterday closed at the best level since May of 2017. But as a two-day chart shows, we rallied up a bit. Now we're giving it back. We've kind of lost the bid here. We're only down about a fifth of a cent. But it seems as though many times the profile of the dollar index is it goes sideways, holds on to strength, spikes, and comes and retraces. We want to see where this takes us. Carl, Jim, back to you.
All right, Rick, thank you. As we said earlier, shares of Beyond Meat are way up today. McDonald's announcing it will test what it's calling the PLT, plant lettuce and tomato sandwich, using Beyond Meat patties. We talked to McDonald's chief Steve Easterbrook back in May, and this is what he had to say about plant-based meat.
When you look at the whole meat substitute type ideas, I think what will be interesting for us will be to see who is particularly interested in that. Is it an existing customer who wants just an alternative option? Is it bring a new customer in? So we're exploring that. We're trying to understand it better and also understand their, you know, customers' acceptability of that particular type of product, because there's a lot of buzz around it at the moment, but it's clearly prepared in a different way to a traditional beef patty is. So, but we're keeping a close eye on it and watch this space.
It's telling, Jim, that they didn't go anywhere near GMOs, which you've talked about a lot.
Well,
and if they can engineer this thing in the kitchen, well, wow, that would be amazing.
I mean, I've had a professional chef make a bunch of different dishes when I ate with Ethan Brown over at the CEO. I do feel that the GMO thing will be a very big issue, that Impossible Burger, as great as it tastes, is GMO. And the ethos of people who are eating this is anti-GMO. And Steve Easterbrook, I love Easterbrook, and I think that he's bold in doing this. But I think, and I also think he recognizes, this is not about vegetarians. It's about another way to think about food. And that's why I think it's going to have more popularity than just the vegetarian percentage.
We're going to definitely watch this test.
Oh, my God. I'm going to fly up there and eat 1,000 of them.
When we come back, we're going to continue to watch Peloton's IPO. Stick around for the first trade, obviously, as the Dow's down 15 and the S&P's down 7. Mike runs off almost 1%, still hanging on to the 49 level as we wait for earnings after the bell. Stocks up more than 50% so far for the year. And we will have an exclusive with the CEO tomorrow, 9 a.m. Eastern time. When we come back, though, it's Stop Trading with Jim. Dow's down 9. Let's get to Jim and Stop Trading.
Talk a lot about FANG, talk a lot about growth, talk a lot about Peloton today. Procter & Gamble's been the great leader. I mean, you take a look at the chart of when Nelson Peltz joined the board, the stock's up 35% since the year began. And that was the one to buy, not all this crazy growth. And I just have to hand it to those guys. When I interviewed David Taylor and Nelson Peltz last week at Living Alpha, it's pretty clear that this is not done. It can go higher still. Man,
the thesis that the Giants couldn't innovate their way out of a paper bag.
I know.
Although maybe Peltz was the catalyst. Who knows?
Well, I think he would tell you David Taylor had a lot of good things in place. They're doing a good job. And no slight to Unilever, but they've become the big growth engine in consumer packaged goods. Yeah.
Jim, how about tonight?
I've got Taylor Morrison on tonight. I think last time we had KB Holmes, the conference call, housing punches above its weight. We've got to find it. Remember, housing has nothing to do with China. So it's just terrific. Sheryl's fantastic spokesperson for the industry. Let's find out how it's doing. And some people are saying, Jim, you care too much about Juul. No, I care about 150,000 people who die from lung cancer. Maybe it's a little. Why not?
One of the biggest stories in business, as you said on Twitter a few moments ago, Jim.
You've been listening to the opening hour of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.